Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Casey is a licensed therapist from Wake Forest, North Carolina. Throughout her career, she has worked in a variety of settings, including hospice, employee assistance programs, and for the last 12 years, private practice. Her current passion is supporting women through their adjustment to motherhood. She has advanced training in loss and grief and postpartum depression and anxiety. She is a proud member of the Secular Therapy Project and the Freedom from Religion Foundation. She is thrilled to be part of the RFR's online mental health programming. Casey, we want to welcome you.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks, Eric.
Hi, Casey. So what I'll do is I'm going to kind of post all of your website and how people can like find out about you in the chat here. And also, during their conversation chat, you are going to probably have some questions. So go ahead and type those questions into the chat. We'll get those answered after we have our discussion. So don't hesitate to participate and pop it on in. Casey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. You ready?
Weather's nice here in North Carolina. It's springtime and sun is shining and...
I hear there's a storm heading your way, though. If it's hitting Arkansas, it's probably going to head your way pretty soon.
Yeah, I think it's going to be dreary here tomorrow, so we take what we can get.
You're welcome. So I would like to start off with maybe you telling us what is grief. Do you have a good definition of what grief is?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. I thought we'd go over some basic, you know, terminology. And, you know, the process of loss happens anytime we are forced to give up something significant. So if you think about that, think about how much we're all grieving right now, how much we've given up, how much we're seeing other people giving up. And then, so that's loss. And then grief is the process of transitioning something or somebody that we're attached to from being in the present with us to being present only in our memory. So that's the grieving process. That's what the pain is about. You know, going from knowing that you're seeing this person, they're with you in the present tense, to only being in the past.
In the memory.
In your memory. Yeah. And that's what the pain is all about, trying to reconcile that, trying to make sense of that. Making sense of something that doesn't make sense.
Can this extend to more than just people? I mean, I'll be honest. One of the key things the final things that sort of where I became an atheist was the loss of a very beloved pet about 10 years ago or so. And it was, she went through a horrible bout of bone cancer and we had to decide to put her down. And then about 3 months later, I started just kind of grieving and or at least I felt like I was grieving and weeping and stuff like that. Is it more than just people?
Oh, for sure. And pets are one of the most painful, I think. They're part of your family. You know, you attach to them, you choose them, they choose you. You know, when it comes to family, like we all probably have those family members that we wouldn't choose if the circumstances were different. But your pet is there for you. It's unconditional love for you. It's your companion. They're very special to us. And so when they're not around, and the process of having to put your pet down is heart wrenching. I don't know how many people have had to do that. I know I have. And, there's nothing like that pain. And, and the house, I mean, when you get back home from that appointment, your house has never been so still and lonely and quiet, right?
Right. And you get, like you said, that attachment to that pet. I have a dog that I take backpacking with me, and she has her own backpack, and I just love going out in the woods and going on, you know, a day or two backpack trip with her. And I know that I'm going to miss Momo, is her name, when she's gone. So yeah.
Yeah, they're always happy to see you.
Yeah.
You don't fight. You might get irritated with them, but like, they're always there for you. They're happy to see you every time you walk in the door. So pet loss is loss. So that's, you know, and that's one of those things that, and we'll talk a little bit about how to support others, but, you know, people who don't have pets don't always understand how significant they are to us. And that grief happens when we lose a pet, just like when we lose a person or any of the other types of grief that we're going to talk about. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Good. Is there a difference between grieving and mourning?
Yes, Todd. Mourning is the term that we use for the public expression of grief and the public acknowledgement of grief. So it's where the rituals come in, and funeral services or memorials. It's that opportunity that people have for loved ones to come and express their sympathy and publicly recognize you and see you for what you're going through, and to see you going through your loss.
Okay, so that makes sense.
Mourning isn't necessarily something you can do in private?
I mean, but I think sometimes people use those words. They probably use the word mourning interchangeably with grieving or bereavement. Okay. But mourning is technically is that public acknowledgement of it.
So grief is more the feeling, and mourning is kind of the outward expression of that feeling.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, the grief is what happens internally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So, why are we having this discussion? Like, if we were all kind of raised just fine and we didn't have any issues with grief, like, why are we even having to have this conversation? Because I know that from what I've seen in a lot of the support group meetings, that folks are having a hard time, especially coming out of religious backgrounds, having a very hard time understanding what grief is and even kind of being okay with it and even knowing how to deal with it.
Yeah, I think grief is something that we need to be talking about. It's the only way to get healthier at it is to have the tough conversations. We're not really good at facing pain. You know, as humans, we try our best to stay away from that stuff. And that's our brain, you know, keeping us safe, keeping us going on. If we stopped and really contemplated our own death or the death of people that we care about, we wouldn't even get out of bed. So, you know, our brain really doesn't, I mean, if you could even try that as an experiment, you know, try to think about your own death, and you won't make it for very, you know, very long, because your brain will just distract you with something else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in our society, we're terrible at it. We're terrible at supporting people who are grieving. We're terrible at, because we like to fix things. We like to, you know, naturally, we like to sort things and label things and organize it in neat little boxes and bows, and grief doesn't make sense. And so it really comes down to saying, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to do with this. It feels uncomfortable. And being in that pain is tough, and we need support through it. And so I think conversations like this one are really important, just to get people talking about it and realizing that it is messy and it's painful and it's supposed to be, but you don't have to go through it alone.
Well, I'm really excited to see what type of help you're going to be offering us tonight, what we can use, what tools. Are there some misconceptions about grief that people have?
Definitely. There's a lot of mystery, you know, surrounding grief and death, you know, in general. I think that's one of the scams of religion, is that they've exploited our fear of the unknown and our fear of death. And they've offered us this bargain, you know, if you can follow all of our confusing rules and give us all your money, you can have eternal life. And hey, that's enough for most people to get on board, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth is that we're all capable of grieving without God. And I would say that the healthiest grieving happens without any magical thinking at all.
Seems like, you know, religions in some sense, or at least the religions we know of, are only, gosh, very like 3,000 years old, 4,000 years old. That's kind of stretching it. But us humans, we've been on this planet for 200,000 years or so. And it wasn't like we just started grieving 4,000 years ago or something. We had to have evolved the capacity to grieve. And we can even see it in some of our closest animal relatives. We can see it in other animals, in the animal, like elephants, a classic example. Mm-hmm. Even some cetaceans and do it as well. We're not the only ones on this planet. We're not the only species on this planet that grieve, right?
Right, exactly. So there's further proof that we can do this without any religious beliefs or supernatural, you know, woo-woo. So, and, you know, I'll go back to what we were talking about before, about how grief is not just what happens when we lose someone that we love. So I think the first myth I want to dispel is that grief only happens after the death of someone. That's not the only time we grieve. We're grieving really all the time. And especially right now, with the COVID-19 crisis, everybody everywhere is grieving. And I can't think of another time when the whole world was grieving, you know, through the same types of experience. So we are truly all in this together. People are dying. People are losing their jobs. We've lost all of our sense of normalcy. Mm-hmm. And if you just think about how you've been coping with this crisis, you've probably resorted to your, you know, the coping skills that you have, that you've been using to deal with any kind of stress in your life. So grief is a very exaggerated, intense type of stress.
So you're suggesting, and I can totally see this, you're suggesting that we are grieving from how the world used to be, like how our the loss of our old like schedules and our old ways of being, and that we're experiencing that as a loss.
Absolutely. You know, kids, I think about kids grieving the end of their school year. You know, happened, and we weren't prepared, and they've lost any, you know, all of the ideas and what they imagined the rest of their school year to look like, vacations. I mean, you name it.
Seniors without graduating parties and
proms
and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. All of those rituals, those mile markers, they haven't happened the way that we intended them to happen. So we had to give that up. We had to give up those dreams and those ideas of what was to come and reconcile that. And so that, you know, that's the process. You also grieve when you leave your religion. You know?
Absolutely, yes.
So, yeah. I mean, think about that. It's very complicated. You know, for many people, it's their foundation. They grew up, you know, as part of a religious tradition, and celebrated and grieved by going to funerals at their church. And some people even went, I mean, their education was affiliated with their church. So when you leave your religion behind, you definitely grieve over that. And that can be a really long process. You know, grief takes time. And that's another thing humans aren't good with, you know, being patient. We like for things to be fixed up, you know, and leaving your religion is a positive step But we can grieve over positive things too. And I wanted, can I throw in one of my favorite quotes by Christopher Hitchens? Christopher Hitchens in his book, God is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything. If you haven't read that, go read it. It's just filled with, he's one of my favorite authors. He says, there are days when I miss my old convictions as if they were an amputated limb. But in general, I feel better and no less radical. And you will feel better too, I guarantee, once you leave hold of the doctrinaire and allow your chainless mind to do its own thinking. I love that.
Yeah.
So even though you're grieving, it is, it's what gets you to the next step.
Which is what?
Which is the next step.
Next step. Okay.
Whatever it is, right? You move forward, not knowing. We don't know. We have to be okay with not knowing.
What are some of the other things we can experience grief over?
Well, I definitely wanted to mention Mother's Day. That is coming up for us in this country, in the U.S. And it is a very complicated one. It's okay to feel sad about Mother's Day. It's also okay to be happy about Mother's Day. And if you have a great relationship with your mom and she's around and you celebrate with her, that's awesome. However, there are a lot of people who experience a lot of pain when Mother's Day approaches, either because they've lost their mother or they don't have a healthy relationship with their mother. There are a lot of toxic moms out there. Hard to believe, I know.
No, I think that's a great point. I see that so often on social media, folks pointing out, I didn't have the greatest mom. I kind of feel a little alone on Mother's Day. And for me personally, my father is not a very nice guy. And I kind of feel the same way on Father's Day. I've gotten past it, but I still is like, that old fantasy of having the perfect family, the father who actually cares about you and not about himself. It hits me in the back of the mind a little bit.
Yeah. When you stand there, at the greeting card aisle and you are looking through the cards, there's just not one, for toxic fathers and mothers. So it can leave you feeling isolated if you feel like you just don't fit in with that idea. Women who aren't able to have children, or who have lost children,
it's abusive relationships, like abusive parents.
Yeah. So, so that's something to keep in mind, as we move on through this week and, as that Mother's Day approaches next weekend.
What are some other things that you can think of that we, can grieve from?
I think another one that's really important to point out is, there is a term called anticipatory grief. So that is what happens when you have a loved one who has been diagnosed with a terminal illness and you are going through the process of losing them, especially something like Alzheimer's, where they are slipping away from you. So you start the grief process when you find out that that your loved one is not going to be as around as much or as long as you had anticipated. And with Alzheimer's, they start to become someone else. So you lose them that way. It's just a different kind of grief. And, when that person actually dies, you still grieve, so it's like you do it twice. As the anticipation of it looms over you, and then actually when they die. So as people live longer and longer now, more of us are going to be in those types of situations.
I have kind of a weird experience with that. My mother died of cancer, and she was suffering for nearly 2 years, so we knew it was coming. And then in this summer, she went 23 days without eating, and we all knew that she was going to pass away. And the family got together. We were all were there around her bed and stuff. And we were grieving for the loss because we knew she it was any day. And she just kept hanging on. And then on the 23rd day, she kind of came to and said, I'm hungry. And she ate and she rebounded. And this was in like September. And so she rebounded. She was in Northern Indiana. We ended up bringing her back here to Arkansas. And she had another like 3 months. And then she passed in November. And when she actually passed, I felt like I didn't really grieve for her passing because I had grieved in the summertime that she had passed. I think I came to terms with it or something. I don't know. I just thought that was a weird thing for me to experience.
Yeah, you were at a different place. You know, you still grieved, but it was, you know, maybe not what you imagined. And that's okay. And that's a part of, you know, that I'll keep coming back to tonight is that grief is unique. It's not the same for everybody. And your grief will not look like somebody else's. There are commonalities, you know, from all the research and stuff, but we're still all individuals and we will grieve individually. So.
Now, is there a specific order? Like I hear this, you know, there's like five stages of grief or something like that. Is there something like, is that a myth or is that real? I think it's denial and anger. Bargaining is one of them. Acceptance is another one.
That's my second myth, Eric.
It's almost like we're working from it.
It's almost like exactly. Yes, we have all probably heard of the stages of grief. That comes from the work of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She was one of the pioneers in grief research. And her stages of grief model has led people to believe that grief is kind of like a to-do list, you know. Again, we love that. Stages, sure, check them off. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, done. But it doesn't really work like that. It's more of a zig and a zag, and you can go backwards and forwards and feel like you got this, and you might have a good day, and then you wake up and it's your loved one's birthday or an anniversary, and it sends you right back, you know, to square one. So there's another model called the dual process model, and I won't bore everybody with the details of that, but it's a lot more accurate in how people experience grief and how they cope with grief, because it focuses on the loss of the circumstances. So the loss is, you know, the memories that you have, yearning for the person to be back with you, thinking about the dreams that you had with the person for the future, and ruminating maybe on the death itself, and reliving it over and over and things like that. And then there's the restoration aspect of it, which is the layers of the practical part, the financial changes that you face when you especially like if you're losing a spouse or something like that. The challenge of restoring your life. So it's that second part of grief, that integrating that loss into your life. So going from the present to your memory. So that's that restoration. You're trying to restore this idea of your life now without that person with you. So that tends to be a more accurate model of loss and grief. But certainly the denial and the anger, the depression and bargaining and acceptance, those are all very common when people are grieving. But it's just important to remember that they don't happen in order. You know, it's not a linear path. You can be all over the place. It's messy. And just about anything you're feeling is normal, you know?
Yeah.
So you're not crazy, you're grieving, is what I say constantly to my clients.
So what I hear you saying is that there's no right way or wrong way to grieve?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Everybody's different. It's not, it doesn't happen in order, and there's no right way and there's no wrong way. And we have to remember that when we see someone else grieving, You know, here in the South, it's common for people to say, oh, look at her. Did you see her? She was so strong. She looked so good. Her hair looked awesome. She's doing so well. Bless her heart. You know, we make a lot of assumptions based on that, you know, what we imagine somebody's grief must feel like.
I just gotta say your North Carolina accent's coming out.
Oh yeah. I turned it up a little bit there.
Can you think of unhealthy ways to grieve at all? I mean, other than physically harming yourself or others in that same vein, is there any unhealthy ways to grieve?
Well, for sure. Overusing alcohol or drugs, mm-hmm. Like you said, harming yourself, self-medicating, with drugs or alcohol. That's the big ones that I can come up with. Not seeking support, you know, it is unhealthy in a sense. You know, it's okay to feel like you need some time away from people. But it's not okay to isolate yourself to the point where all you're doing is ruminating on your loved one. You know, so grief is tricky because grief is supposed to be painful. But there are certainly like unhealthy, you know, ways to get through it.
Yeah. So bottling it up, I would imagine would somewhat be unhealthy. I mean, obviously being isolated, keeping yourself, you know, like, hey, I just need some time alone, but keeping it down long-term, which I see a lot of religions encouraging folks to do, can be pretty harmful. Is that
yeah.
right?
Yeah, like, you know, putting a Band-Aid on it and saying, like, well, at least they're not suffering anymore, or at least they're in a better place, those kinds of things. Like, those are not helpful. And, you know, the anger part is natural, and a lot of religious traditions kind of discourage that, you know, don't be angry at God, don't question God, that kind of thing. And anger is just, it's a natural emotion. It has a purpose, and it's part of grieving. You can certainly be angry that the person isn't here anymore. Mm-hmm. You can be angry at the illness that took them or whatever, and whatever you're grieving. It's certainly expected and natural to feel anger. So what's important is that we express those feelings in some way, writing about it, listening to music, talking to somebody, distracting yourself is actually, you know, a healthy part of grieving.
Oh,
you
really?
Cannot, yes, you cannot grieve 24 hours a day. Like, that cannot be the only thing you do. Mm-hmm. It will be the only thing you do sometimes, but not forever. Mm-hmm. So it's a balance, there, and you have to allow yourself to feel the pain and then allow yourself to feel okay sometimes too, because then that's where the guilt kind of kicks in. And if you actually have a good day or you're feeling happy, you can start to beat yourself up because my grief is supposed to look this way. It's mm-hmm. supposed to look like me crying all the time.
So you're almost,
go ahead, Eric.
Sorry, Todd.
Sorry.
It almost seems like you're suggesting that our minds get in the way of our grieving. Like, if we would let our body kind of experience it and express it and be okay with that, is it sounds like that's healthy.
Yeah. I think that we do. We kind of get in our own way okay. because we have, you know, societal, cultural norms or religious tradition or whatever it is that we keep going back to, that can lead us to do this the right way. And if we can just remember that there is no right or wrong, and you feel what you feel, and you have permission to feel those feelings, then you can take as long as you take.
Kind of piggybacking on that, I mentioned the dog that we had to put down several years ago. And when I do start to talk about her and kind of how how tough that was. I still get choked up. I still well up with tears, and it's hard for me. Is this something like, is grief something that I get over? Like, as I was told, I feel that, hey, get over it. It's been years. You should be done grieving by now.
Move on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is it something I can get over ever, or?
No, you get through it.
You know what?
Honestly, you won't actively be grieving forever, but you will always love your dog and you won't ever forget her or him. You have pictures, right? You have memories. They are not going anywhere. Mm. So I think that's healthy grief that you have processed. I would say that you are not actively grieving. I would say you're having memories of your dog that you love.
Mm. Okay.
I love that. I like that perspective. I'm not getting over it. You're hanging on to it because of the memories.
Right. Right. Your attachment now is to the memory.
Yeah. There's a quote that I think it's attributed to Banksy, the artist, but it's always something that has recently resonated with me, that he said, they say that you die twice, once when you draw your last breath and the second time, the last time someone says your name, type of thing. So you kind of, you die physically and then you die in the memories of the people that you affected. And so that's kind of nice to hear you say that I'm experiencing and reliving the memories that I had with her. That she's still sort of alive in my own memories.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah. That's how I think that is what a non-religious, a non-believer's healing process, involves. Instead of ideas about an afterlife, we think about our memories being that person's afterlife, in a sense, that they do live on, in our hearts and our memories, in the way that we remember them and continue to tell their story.
So what about, here's a twist on it. When my wife and I, we came out of our religious beliefs about 8 years ago, and especially my wife, she lost 100% of her friends. And that was one of the hardest things for her, the grieving of losing her friends she thought were her real friends. What about that type of grief?
Oh, yeah. That's certainly real grief right there. And it's layers and layers of loss when you lose friendships and future plans that you had involving those people. So you not only lose the religious tradition and that framework that kind of guided you, but the social support that was there in that network. You suddenly have to recreate that and find new friendships and that's really hard as an adult to find friends. It's hard to establish those relationships.
Yeah, it was devastating to both of us, but especially to my wife. It spun her in a spiral of depression, and it took nearly 2 years to get out of it.
Wow!
So it was deep.
Yeah. What helped with that? What helped
therapy,
her?
Going to therapy. Yeah, talking about it, and
probably knowing that she wasn't really alone. She felt very alone.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. But she wasn't. Yeah. Yeah.
Very much so.
There are a lot of losses that present like a complicated kind of grief. And I think definitely like leaving a religion is one of those. Also losing someone to suicide or in a tragedy, a shock, like an accident, a horrible accident that's shocking and traumatic. A person who goes missing and you don't know. You don't have the answers to what happened. So
closure to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are harder, different to resolve because you lack the answers. And just that process of accepting that you will never know the answers is hard for our human brain, for sure.
Now, you know, we are material beings. We're a complex collection of chemical reactions and physical processes. And with that in mind, I'm kind of thinking that there might be some like physical manifestations of what's going on in our heads with some experiencing some grief, not talking about like the mourning, but actually, would there be anything like that? Like, can I experience something like, I don't know, like pain, physical pain as opposed to just mental pain?
Yes. Yes. It can look like just about anything. You think about stress and how it can cause headaches and back pain and things like that. Grief does the same thing. And whenever I have, you know, someone who comes to see me who is coping with grief, I always ask, like, have they seen their primary care physician? Because, because grief is hard. Mm-hmm. Grief is hard on your body. And you may not realize it. Because you're just trying to survive this loss and deal with it. But it can look like headaches or, you know, digestion problems, certainly difficulty sleeping. That's one of the number one things. Or on the other hand, sleeping too much. Same with eating, just losing your appetite completely or eating too much. Those are kind of the physical, like I mentioned, back pain, nausea. Really hard physically.
So I can actually understand then when someone would turn to alcohol or turn to pills or turn to drugs as an attempt to self-medicate those physical things away. But I had never considered going to a primary doctor, but that's pretty cool. I wanted to cuss because like that's like how cool it was to me, but that was neat. I just had a cool understanding now. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. you mentioned the self-medicating and, the self-medicating, that's that vicious cycle of, relying on drugs or alcohol to numb not only the emotional pain, but to help you with the physical pain. And so it's kind of, it gets into that cycle. You're not even sure like what came first.
Yeah. And then, what kind of, mental type of, experiences might folks get out of this?
So certainly, we've talked about the emotional fallout of grief and, it can look like, crying, sadness, feeling, having dark thoughts, feeling like you're unable to concentrate. The more cognitive symptoms would be forgetfulness, confusion, feeling that warped sense of time that we all feel right now.
Okay. So like time is either totally sped up or slowed down type of thing?
Yeah, just kind of confusion about like what day is it? How long has it been? And then, replaying that death, the grief timeline kind of in your head to ground yourself.
The part is kind of interesting to me as well. Like I see some folks kind of like, I think my own mom seems to have forgotten some stuff. And when I remind her, she's surprised about it and she just recently lost her own mother. I wonder if I had never thought that considered forgetfulness might be a cognitive manifestation of grief too.
Yeah. And your brain can play tricks on you when you're grieving. I'm sure a lot of people here will recognize this kind of thing. But when you've lost somebody and you think something big happens, in your life, whether it's like something happy or something funny, and you think, oh my gosh, I can't wait to tell, and that person's not there. That was your person that you shared things with, and now they're not around. And so for just a split second, you know, your brain expects for you to be able to text that person. And so just for that tiny millisecond, you forget that you've lost them.
It almost sounds like reconditioning yourself from habit. Like, oh, I would call or I'd text my sister or my mother every night. And now I have to kind of get out of that habit, even though I don't want to. I miss her.
Right. Yeah. Because you're attached to that person and you're attached to all those behaviors that you linked with your relationship to that person.
Yeah.
It's common for people to think that they see the person, you know, and not just people who believe in ghosts, but like people, you know, typically rational people will, you know, again, for a split second, see the back of somebody, you know, in a store or something. And
okay.
That looks just like, you know, mom or whatever.
Like the clothing a person would wear or the gait that they would have or the hairstyle.
Yeah. Yeah. So all that's really common and just kind of just our brains, I think, trying to sort through
it makes sense of things. It's a whole time of adjusting. My dad was passed away in 81, and about 3:30 in the afternoons, he'd always come home and you would literally hear his truck drive in the driveway because you're just expecting that and you're looking forward to it. And then you realize, oh, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And sometimes you probably thought you almost heard that sound or something similar would totally take you back to that. Yeah. Very common.
Now, kind of coming out of religion, the funerals I experienced were kind of had a lot of ritual around it. And I look back at those now and I see them as a little goofy with some of the things that they did and the phrases that they said. And so when I came out of religion, my initial reaction was to like just turn away from the whole idea of ritual. Look, I know that all I have is me. Where there is no spirit world or et cetera, so why would I need a ritual type of thing? Because I feel like that was my only example, but I come a little bit around that rituals are important for humans. What do you have to say about that?
Absolutely. You just officiated at a secular wedding.
That's true. Right?
Yeah. So it's really like, you know, don't let the religious people have all the fun. I mean, we know they're not, but but it's not just religious people that need rituals. We do. Rituals are important. They're important to publicly have that acknowledgement of our loss. It gives us a sense of control. And when you're a non-believer, you get to have whatever kind of ritual you want. So that's the beautiful thing about not having these kinds of things, you know, prescribed by a belief system. It's up to you. And it can be a gathering of people or dedicating, you know, something, a bench or something in a favorite park of your loved one, or planting a tree or planting a community garden in that person's name, or, I mean, really, like, the sky's the limit. You know, that person's favorite music, you know, can be so special and painful, right? It's painful to have those kinds of memories. But that, you know, we know that grief is painful and it's supposed to be. So honor that person and use those rituals to help you get through the pain and not feel so alone.
This last fall, we had Recovering from Religion had the fall excursion, and one of our workshops that Gail Jordan put on for us was building new traditions in our lives, coming up with new rituals on things that and like you said, don't let the Christians or the religious people have all the fun. Create our own fun. Create our own our traditions in our lives. So.
Yeah, I love that. I missed the excursion. It was right here in North Carolina too.
It was.
I had something else going on that weekend. Yeah. That in itself, you know, an excursion of non-believers, that's beautiful. You know, who says like retreats have to just be like for the corporate world or the, you know, religious. Yeah. Anytime people can gather and and just feel that those common bonds and that you're going through something together and not so alone. It really can make all the difference, especially for getting through something painful like grief. That's why support groups are so helpful.
Yeah. In grade school, a friend of mine lost his mother very suddenly and very unexpectedly. And my mom did an awesome thing. Like I thought at the time was an awesome thing. We found a tree and did exactly kind of what you said. We found a tree and we planted a tree and put a little plaque out in front of it in memory of so-and-so. And I went to, it was actually in the a nice place at the middle school that we went to the, and so I attended that school. I would go out and play recess. And over the years, I got to see this tree grow and get bigger and become become a really like full and mature tree. And every time I saw that tree, I couldn't help but thinking of not only my friend, but his mother as well. And it surprisingly, it put a smile on my face. I wasn't sad about it, but I was, it was a good memory to walk away with. Just remember her and remember my friend too. I really liked that. You're saying that was a ritual. I didn't even consider that being a ritual.
Yeah. And that's really a great kind because it's something good for the environment and it's a gift to the community and, it can carry on her story. You know, I mean, think about like the people who see that plaque or that sign and they say, oh, who was that person? Yeah. And somebody else knows the story and tells her story to that person. And so she lives on that way.
Yeah.
And it really it's beautiful.
I haven't done it yet as a humanist celebrant, but I would like to one day sort of help do a funeral service for folks. And when I go to funeral services for the religious in churches and stuff, it drives me nuts when they, instead of kind of like focusing on who this person was and kind of sharing memories, there is a constant barrage of you need to get straight with God before you die, or you're never going to see him, or you're going to go into hell. I see it as a disgusting sales call in this church while friends and family are grieving. And I have to bite my tongue and then I get all bloody and it's just a bad scene.
Yeah. I've unfortunately attended those kinds of funerals too, where it turns into they completely hijack the reason why everyone's there and they turn it, like you said, into a sales pitch or a chance to scare everyone into, you know, joining the faith. So, yeah.
And it keeps people from properly grieving. I hate it so much. I won't go to a religious funeral anymore. If I can help it, I just will avoid them. It's too much.
Yeah, Todd, that's a really good point. You know, when you're grieving and when you are grieving the loss of someone who was religious and, you know, the service happens in a church and you find that very triggering, it's okay to not go. Mm. You know, you get to decide how you grieve.
Yeah. I'll say my goodbyes a funeral.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, an atheist, certainly, like, you know, if you think about it, when a non-believer expresses their sympathy to you or their love for you or condolences or whatever you want to call it, you can know that it is coming from their heart because they don't ascribe to any kind of like deal with the supreme being. They're saying these things because they genuinely feel them. So I think, you know, atheists and non-believers just have a more authentic opportunity to express, you know, their sympathy to someone who's grieving and to support that person
Well, that's
for the real reason, you know?
Mm-hmm. I want to tell you a story. Let me tell you something. Last October, I witnessed a tragic accident from a good friend of mine on a cycling trip. And we were coming down a mountain, and he was going too fast around a curve, and he went over the edge, and he was killed. I was the first one there, and I was trying to save my friend, and he didn't make it. But the point of my story is that the next morning, I'm a firefighter, retired firefighter, so we think we're tough and we can handle stuff, trauma like that. We deal with it all the time. But it's different when it's a friend and a personal friend. And I was okay. I got home that night. I was so tired, exhausted, and I just fell asleep. But I woke up about 3 a.m. in the quiet of the night, and my mind was going crazy and remembering everything that happened the day before and what could have I done different and stuff. And I ended up getting up about 4 a.m. because I couldn't sleep, and went and sat out on my porch with my dog, Momo, and a cup of coffee, and just was trying to chill and think and relax. And about 7 o'clock, my friend, who's a secular friend, Frank, calls me and he says, "Todd, what are you doing?" I said, "Frank, I'm just sitting on my porch just thinking." He said, "Well, I'm in my truck. I'm headed to your house. I just want you to know I'm on my way." He comes over a little after 7 and he sits with me all day on my porch till about 2. And didn't really have to say anything, but we're just sitting in the quietness with me. But the cool thing was around 8 o'clock, another friend of mine who is an atheist shows up on my porch and comes and sits with me. And then a third one calls and says, "Todd, I'm on my way." I had 3 of my secular friends come and sit with me and just to be with me and to grieve with me. And then that afternoon, a group, about 10 groups, 10 guys that were riding with us that were at the accident, they called me and said, "Todd, we're going to go ride our bikes this afternoon. We want to know if you can come and talk to us." And so I showed up and I went and talked with them and talking about grief and how to handle trauma that we would experience and stuff. And we spoke, I was just trying to help them. And they left and went on a bike ride, and 2 guys stayed back because they wanted to talk to me more. And they were both preachers. And they said, "Todd, we are so glad that you are here because we had no idea what to say to tell these people. Are you trained in counseling or something? Because you had such good words." And I just said, "I just love people and I just want to help." But it just went to me, showed that, like you were saying, that the atheists really know how to lean in, and what they say to you in time of grieving comes from their heart. And the people that are religious are left without words sometimes. So I just want to share that.
What a beautiful story. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. You know, be present. Human. Being human. Not avoiding it, you know. Your friends knew that you needed something, right? They didn't know what you needed, but they didn't let that scare them.
No, it meant the world to me that they would just come and be there with me and not having to say anything or try to say, you know, God needed a cyclist on his team in heaven or something, you know. So the platitudes.
Yeah. And that was actually my last myth I wanted to bust, was that atheists aren't equipped to handle grief or support others. But no, it, you know, not having religion, you know, doesn't mean that you don't know what to do with, when it comes to rituals or grieving or any of that. You actually, have a much healthier, I think, perspective on death too, you know, just the idea of death. You know, we non-believers tend to appreciate and embrace science. And it's, you know, it's life.
And we kind of understand that this is all we've got. There is no reset button. There is no afterlife. This is all we got. When I feel that when the secular folks that do kind of come and comfort me when I'm grieving for like loss of my grandmother or loss of my pet, that they understand how precious life is, and they understand that there is nothing else after this compared to your dog has just traveled over the rainbow bridge and you'll see them, you know, when you die. Oh, your grandmother is in heaven. You don't know that. You don't know if, you know, and even those the awful people, like an abusive parent is going to heaven or something. Yeah, you'll see them again. I so appreciate the secular folks who come to me and comfort me when in times of loss and mourning. It just feels so heartfelt, like what you guys were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause that's what that's, and we can move on to how to support if we want, like we can go ahead and get into that. Some things that are helpful, when you're supporting someone who is grieving.
That is kind of something that, when I first came out of religion, I can't say, you'll see them again, because I don't believe that. I can't say God will be there to comfort you, because that feels totally like bullshit now.
Or I'm praying for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
What do I say?
What are some of the things that I could do or non-believers can do to folks who are grieving, can say and do for them?
Well, I'll tell you this is scary and it's not comfortable, but that's why I'm here, to push you out of that comfort zone and encourage you to do what's helpful, not what's easy. So ask the person to tell you the story of their loved one. You know,
I like
because
that.
So many people are afraid to mention the name of the deceased. You know, it's like, it's all of a sudden, this person's life, name, everything about them is taboo, and we are tiptoeing around it, you know. And in grief counseling, we call it the elephant in the room, everybody knows is there, but nobody knows what to say. And, you know, just saying like, what is your, tell me the story of your person, you know, what do you miss about them? If you have memories of the person, so if that person was also close to you, share your favorite memory of them. Share something funny or touching that the person did for you, because you know this is what that bereaved person is craving.
Yeah.
Anything about the person, like they have their memories, but they may not even know what you remember about their spouse or mother or father or whoever it is that they've lost. So talk about it.
Yeah, I hear that every now and then. Someone would say a story, and someone who was the other person who was really close to that the deceased would say, "I never knew that about him," and kind of like it would be a glimmer of a smile or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really important, and it can feel really weird, you know, like you're doing something wrong, right? But like we said before, there's no right or wrong way to do this. And it is, I mean, it's like the one is the genuinely, like it's the most helpful thing, to do. So also if you don't know what to say, you know, sometimes you're in that situation where you don't really know the person, or you didn't know the deceased, or you're not like super close with them, and you may not feel comfortable saying like, so tell me about your loved one. You could say, I have no idea what to say. If you don't know what to say, don't make something up. You don't have to. You could say, this must be really horrible for you. I have no words.
Yeah.
Because your presence is what really matters. And I know Dave Warnock said something similar last week in his talk, that just being present, you know, because especially once the services, you know, have happened and everybody stopped bringing food by and that kind of thing, and they're getting back into daily life without their person around. That is one of the most isolating and lonely times. So, you know, if you can just not ignore them and check in on them, and if they don't feel like having people around, they can certainly say that. But, you know, so, but you can always say, I'm thinking about you and wondering how you're doing. And I have no idea what you must be feeling right now. It must be so hard.
Mm. What about I love those words.
Yeah. What about saying things like, at least they're no longer in pain? That kind of feels weird to me.
Yeah. It feels weird because please don't say that. Okay. I know I said there was no right or wrong way to do this, but don't say stuff like that.
Or
I think there's no right or wrong way to grieve, but there's certainly like better ways and less effective ways to support somebody. Yeah. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Or, saying like, oh, at least they're no longer in pain. You know,
it's kind of dismissive.
Yes. Yeah. You're saying like, oh, don't feel that way. You're taking their feelings away. And okay. That's not for anybody to do. Let them have their feelings.
That's not the time. Like, at least they're in a better place.
Right. And for a non-believer, like, we know that's not true.
Yeah. They're worm food at this point.
Right.
Don't say that either.
And don't say that, Eric.
Okay. All right.
Come on, Eric.
Eric, remember, yeah. I don't know what to say. Let's practice.
I don't know what to say. Great. I got it. All right.
There you go.
A lot of times when there's a spouse that has passed away or a significant other, and you've combined a house over years and years, and there are memories that are in the house, clothing or jewelry or even toiletries or food in the refrigerator. What would it be for someone to take a lot of time to kind of sort through those, or even not even deal with it? Is that kind of a okay thing to do?
Absolutely, that stuff can wait. It's up to it's up to the grieving person to decide when the right time is. So that's another thing that people tend to do to be helpful. You know, they will encourage that person, especially like a widow or a widower, like, oh, aren't you ready to get back out there and date? Or, you know, haven't you gotten rid of his stuff yet? Or, you know, don't you want to take these pictures down? Like, you know, and that's not helpful. I think people worry, you know, sometimes it comes from a good place that they're worried that you're going to be stuck in your grief. But, you know, it has no timeline. So if you really think about it, there's no rush to do any of that stuff. So, when you're grieving, it's not really the time to be, and especially like making decisions like selling a house or, you know, selling the person's car or those, it can feel like the best thing to do is just get rid of everything, out of sight, out of mind. But really it's much more helpful to take your time with stuff like that and not be impulsive.
Got it.
Back when my dad passed away, my mom took over a year before she cleaned out his closet. And I think she felt guilty about it because I think if I remember right, she was pressured, like, why haven't you cleaned out the closet yet? And I remember coming into her bedroom and she was sitting on the bed crying and she was going through my dad's things. And, but she took her time doing that. I mean, so.
Yeah. Cause that can't, you know, that's just something that can't be rushed. If a person decides to do it the next day, like it's their decision. I think that's what's important to just keep coming back to, is that each person's grief is theirs.
Yeah. Well, we're running a little short on time before we get to the Q&A part. What about some like tips for coping with grief? Do you got a list of those perhaps?
I do. Take your time. It's awful. It's so awful to grieve. It's supposed to be awful to feel it. You know, feel your pain, like feel the feelings, whatever you're feeling, good, bad, neutral. If you're having a good day, have a good day. If you're having a good 5 minutes, you know, have a good 5 minutes, because the next 10 minutes might be terrible. But just take your time. Do your, you know, get your basic needs met. So eat something. You may not, your appetite certainly won't be the same, but eat something and stay hydrated and sleep. Try to sleep. you know, your sleep will be off. It won't be the same. It'll be different. You might be sleeping too much, or you might not be able to sleep at all. But getting back to some kind of routine is helpful. So, you know, go to bed when, you know, at your like usual bedtime, like try, you know, getting back to work and things like that, that were typically part of your routine. If you had an exercise, regimen, you know, try to get back to that as like, do your best to get, you won't be, your best will look different than it used to be. So be patient with yourself, but try to have your routine, because those are the things that keep you grounded. You are still here. So anything that keeps you moving and keeps you getting up in the morning and going about your day, those things are going to be helpful. They're going to be, it's going to be hard, but you can do it. Rely on your support system. Like we said earlier, you may not feel like having a ton of people around, and that's okay. But if you do need to talk, you know, have that list of trusted people. You know, you may have a huge social network, but not all those people will be there in the way that you need them to be. But you might have a list of 3 or 4 people that can be your go-tos during this time that you can call and say, you know, I really need to talk, or I need to totally not talk about my grief. I need to talk about you. I need to hear something that's not related to what I'm going through. So, cause that's a distraction and that's okay. You know, moving around, support groups can be helpful. They're not for everybody. But your community, hospice organization can, usually has offerings like that that can help. Sometimes they even have specific ones related to a certain type of grief. Like, if you've lost a spouse, or like a men's group, things like that. It can be really helpful because you just don't feel so alone, and your friends are your friends, but they may not be going through something like you're going through. And so a support group of people who are also grieving, can just be really helpful and, with that, not feeling so alone, you know, with other people who get it. Grief is not a mental illness. So people are resilient. So remember that you, to get through grief, you don't necessarily need a counselor. But it can be helpful to talk to a professional, you know, somebody who's trained, because they do get it. And they won't say any of those stupid things that some people say. So, but it's certainly not a requirement. You know, people grieve all the time without counseling and without God.
Perfect. Well, Casey, thank you for so much for
thank you.
And talking with us. We have got so many great questions from the chat. So let's start off with we have there's quite a few folks who have come out of religion, and their friends and family have shunned them, have ostracized them, have turned their backs on them. What kind of, is there anything different about the grieving process for being ostracized from friends and family?
Yeah, I would say that it's, well, I mean, each type of grief is different. But I think when you go through something like that, there's just a lot of what we call shadow grief, you know, so it's not just the religious traditions that you've lost, but you're being, you know, and not just the relationships that have changed, like they have actually disappeared, and they're actually, you know, that shunning part with the shame, is just an added layer, because it makes you, question yourself and maybe even like doubt whether you've made the right decision or not. And you really feel, more isolated than ever, and like you don't have anybody when everybody you counted on basically has just suddenly decided to disappear from your life, and not only disappear but ostracize you. So yeah, I would say that's a more, you know, that's just a complicated kind of process.
What advice would you give to help someone who has a child that's grieving, like a loss of a grandparent or a pet, or maybe their parents went through a divorce?
Kids, depending on the age, kids, we have to give kids a lot more credit because than we usually do, because they do. They pick up on things and they know when something's up. So I'm a fan of talking honestly with kids about death, about grief, you know, and certainly in an age-appropriate way. But I think when we can share a story, a really difficult, you know, on a difficult topic with a child, we are giving them a gift. They're going to grow up with a much healthier attitude about emotions and painful feelings and healing from pain and talking about grief and talking about death. And it will still be hard for them, but they will be able to have conversations about it and they'll be able to express it instead of hiding from it. So I say, you know, have those conversations. There are books, you know, about talking with kids about grief and, you know, so look for some of those. But yeah, I just say like, don't hide from it. And don't make up, you know, stories about it. You know, don't make up stuff. And don't be afraid to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
To a child, you know, if something happened, with the example of a divorce, I think it's really important to say to a child that, you know, things don't always work out. You know, grownups can't always get along, and we've decided to divorce, and we're still your parents. We're not married anymore, but we're still here for you.
We still love you.
We still love you. Yeah. Yeah. Don't shy away from it, because they know something's up, and the more honest you can be, the more they're going to be able to feel like they can come to you when they have something difficult on their mind or they're going through some kind of painful experience.
So my mother went through a pretty bad divorce. My father is an asshole and treated her as such through the entire divorce. But for years, you know, he is still alive. And for years, my mother was grieving the divorce. And I was thinking that, hey, there has to be some sort of time where she kind of gets back into the dating pool, kind of gets over it. But it seemed to take a lot longer. And you know, after this conversation, I'm recognizing how I should have not kind of pushed her to get over it. But what can you suggest about dealing with grief where the situation is, or the person is still alive or still there, and they kind of are either in, you know, you can reach out to them and fling them the middle finger, or you know, what kind of suggestions do you have around that?
Yeah, that having your heart broken, it's one of the worst kinds of grief. Because like you said, the person's still around, and especially if you live in the same community and you have, you know, you could run into them or you see them move on with somebody new.
Getting remarried or finding another significant other or something like that.
Yeah.
It almost seems like it would be easier had the person passed away than if they stuck around.
Yeah, that's a really common way to look at it. It's really common for people to say that and feel that. Because, I mean, it's kind of the truth. You would, you know, that person's around and they chose not to have a life with you. That's terrible. And you have to realize that you will get through it. I mean, I know that sounds empty, but, you have to take your time and, you have to rely on the people who are in your life who do care about you.
Okay.
You know, support is really important. That person, it's to have, you know, this idealistic memory of a relationship once it's over, and to kind of glorify it in your mind that it was perfect and you'll never find somebody just like that person and you'll never love again and all that. And that's normal and natural, feel that, but that's not rational. That's your emotions and that's your attachment to that person. So feel those things and then move on. You know, feel those things, honor what you're feeling, acknowledge it, express it some way, and think about, you know, the evidence that you have that you will get through it. People get through it all the time. You will get through it too. You are not alone. You have people who care about you. You can eventually move on and date. There are plenty of people out there. So, you know, think about the evidence and the, you know, the, try to be more rational about it is what I would say, but I'll, you know, but don't just forget about your emotions. Those are also really important.
In some sense, it was almost a loss of an identity, like who this person was. I saw my mom define herself as a mother and as a wife. And once she lost that wife side, then she kind of was thrown into a tailspin, not understanding kind of who she was if she wasn't a wife. And I kind of suspect that is sort of similar in the religious aspect, like, hey, I identified as a Jehovah's Witness, I identified as a Baptist, I identified as a Muslim for 40 years, and I'm losing this identity. I don't know what to... who to be or how to be without those identities. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're kind of saying, suggesting, give it time. It's okay to feel what you're feeling and what you're going through. And you're also suggesting finding a support group to kind of discuss and express these emotions and these feelings. Am I off about that?
No, that's exactly right. And yes, you mentioned the identity. Yeah, you lose a piece of yourself. You know, that was a, like you said, with your mom, she had, that was a role, a really significant role that she played in her life. That was part of who she was. And so so not only is she grieving the relationship and the person, but a loss, a piece of herself, that she doesn't have anymore. Yeah. And so, you know, you can't ever replace that exact role, but you can learn to embrace something new, you know, and that's what can give value to something like a tragedy, you know, eventually, not in the beginning. You know, when you're in the beginning of it, it's painful and that's where you are. But eventually, as you move through it, you can embrace what you learned from that experience. And I think especially when relationships end, if we can get to a point where we can appreciate what happened, you know, and look at it truthfully and take responsibility for our part in it. And what can we apply, you know, to the next relationship?
And that's something that it sounds like could be brought about through a support group or even through some professional counseling too, kind of understanding the responsibility in it and helping to move past it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm biased, but I think everybody could use some counseling, you know, just to, if, you know, you don't have, and I don't think you need a mental health diagnosis to benefit from counseling, but just to have some support and reassurance that, you know, you're not crazy and you're not alone.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask one more, and I think we need to wrap it up because we've been on almost an hour and a half. This has been really good. But talking about embracing something new in our lives, you know, most of us that have been in religion most of our lives, we're always taught that when we hear about death or someone passing, that we have to rejoice in that. And we weren't allowed to grieve. How do people deal with this switch now that, you know, we're not really rejoicing that we lost a loved one? And allowing ourselves to grieve properly.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, that kind of robs you from some of the pain, you know, and when the religious tradition tells you to, you know, celebrate the homegoing of the person, I think you can do both. Like you could celebrate the life of the person, you can celebrate your relationship and what that person meant to you, their companionship or their friendship. And you can be sad that they're no longer here. You know, I think those two things can happen, can be true at the same time, that you can be in pain and you can be happy that you had them in your life, you know? So I think instead of, you know, the religious spin on it is rejoice that they're in heaven. I think the non-believer's way of looking at that, which is much more rational, is that I miss that person and I'm in incredible pain right now. And I'm thankful that I had them in my life. And I have all these good memories, you know. Yeah. But at, you know, at the beginning, you may not, you know, it's also okay to not embrace that, you know, in the beginning. If all you can see is the pain that you're feeling, that's okay too.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Yes. Yes. Very good.
Casey, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a really, really great talk. I've really enjoyed myself.
Thank you. I was happy to do it.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.